mounted 100 feet in the air. That would be a pretty good performing antenna. And for some reason you decide you haven't got 132 feet of length, and you start shrinking it down. And as long as you re-resonate it by putting in inductors, loading coils, you'll get 95% of the full performance as you make the antenna shrink to very small sizes. I'll admit it becomes very narrow band in performance. You take a shrunken dipole that you've tuned to 3.8 megacycles and you shrink it down real small, you probably cannot QSY more than plus or minus 50 kilohertz before the darn antenna starts going out of resonance, starts giving you a high VSWR, and your antenna tuner's got to work real hard. But within that frequency range that you've resonated it, it'll give you full performance, even though it...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Once you resonate it, even though it's very short in size, you may make an antenna that's only 20% of the normal length. It'll give you 95% of the performance. The same effective capture area, even though physically it's a much smaller antenna. That's the magic of resonance. When you transmit into that small antenna, that energy is bouncing back and forth between two halves of the antenna, and resonance means that all of those bounces stay in phase, stay in step with each other. The magic of resonance is that as long as the signal can bounce long enough, bounce back and forth enough times, every bit of that signal will get radiated into space, as long as you've used low resistance materials to build the antenna. The disadvantage of building it small is that the bounces must be a much larger number of bounces before it gets radiated. That means you've got to work much harder at making sure all those bounces stay in step, because there's a lot more of them. That's the mechanism by which the antenna becomes more narrowband. So if you're smart enough, with very restricted amounts of space for your antennas in your backyard on your favorite band, even if it's the 160 meter band, your backyard will give you an antenna if you're smart enough. By the techniques that Mel's giving you impressions on tonight with his 40 meter example. K2KEY, K2RIW in the tech net.
Yes, this is K2KEY. Well, in a situation like Jerry said, this thing is a very low profile because remember, to see an 8-foot stainless steel whip on top of a 10-foot pipe on the roof is pretty hard to spot, you know, by most people. And for limited budget, and I can say for aesthetic sometimes reasons that, you know, you want to keep not only the XYL, but also possibly the neighbors happy, and you don't have the real estate or whatever to put up a horizontal antenna because of one reason or another, or I, poor Paul and myself go through with the trees, they're great, but you see the birds and the squirrels seem to love to chop down your cords, cut your cords and watch them drop. Maybe they get a little charge out of that or whatever. But anyway, make a long story short, here's a way you can experiment. If in fact, if you don't even have to do all the math, you know, we gave the math how we determine the match and all. If you just look up the pipe that you have in that chart that is in one of the references, you give the length of the pipe and the diameter there, and they will tell you the resistance in ohms. Let me drop.
And one more question, WS2N.
Okay, back to you in second call. They will give you the resistance in ohms and the reactance in ohms. And by then just taking those two factors and looking in a book under, in the ARRL book, they'll even tell you, like I say, you got a chart there, or that you can see exactly how to convert those two reactances and those situations, and show you how to make simple network, L network, how to come up with it, and even, you know, how many turns. I mean, it's all there. So the whole project here is, I guess, get that pipe up in the air, you know, and sticking down some radio. So figuring out a way how to support it and all, you know, tie it off and everything. But it's a good way to do that experiment and decide whether or not you like one of these antennas that will cost you a good number of weeks income, Dick. So try the experiment. That's the bottom line. Over.
Got to pick up with Paul in a second. second. We amateurs no longer build our transceivers on 80 through 10 meters. We don't build our transmitter and receiver. We buy it because there's a 150 transistor equivalent in there by way of all those integrated circuits. It's too elaborate. You can buy it with 1 or 2 weeks salary or 3 weeks salary. It would take you a year and a half to build it. You don't want to build it. But when it comes to antennas, we're always going to be building antennas. In general, they're not expensive, and we're marrying that particular chunk of hardware to our particular backyard. No matter how many antennas you've got, if you're objective, you're going to wish you had more. You'd like to have a vertically polarized one, a horizontally polarized one, one that favors north-south path, one that favors the east-west path, one that's maybe got circular polarization and so on. And antennas in general, except for some of these very expensive, fancy-looking things commercially made, in general, the raw materials are not expensive. If you get it wrong, nothing bad happens. Now, the worst that can happen is a piece of hardware falls over because you didn't make it mechanically strong enough and the wind took it down. But it's not going to explode. It's not going to catch on fire. Modern-day transmitters are very well protected from high standing wave ratio. And if you start off with high standing wave ratio and the antenna doesn't play well with your particular transmitter, there's ways you can tune it. You can correct that problem. So we're always going to be tinkering with antennas, and it's the fun thing to do. One of the first things you're going to do with each guy you get a hold of in Lower Slobovia is you're going to tell him, I'm using a such-and-such antenna, and I made this modification, and boy, am I happy with the way it works. And I tried the so-and-so modification, and it didn't work so well. And that's good information that you share with your buddies, and you become kindred spirits because you're both antenna tinkerers. We amateurs tinker more with antennas than anything else, except for feed lines and antenna tuners.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Okay, yeah, Paul. WS2N, K2RIW. You got it, Paul.
Okay, yeah, one more question for Mel, K2KY, WS2N. I would use, you know, I'm looking for 40 meters, so... a common piece of pipe is copper. A length of copper is 20 feet, general length of copper. Now, it's not usually what you get in Home Depot, which is usually 10 feet. But, you know, a full length of copper is 20 feet. So, you know, of course I can make that 18 feet or even leave it at 20 and just, you know, adjust for the, like you said, the ohmage or whatever on the pipe. But my question is, this pipe would have to be insulated from ground. You know, it's going to go into the first coil at the bottom, and then eventually into the second coil. But this pipe cannot be like directly coming out of the ground. You apparently need some kind of bracket set up to attach it to the ground, and then insulating material with clamps. This is what I'm picturing. Is that right, Mel? This vertical piece of pipe has to be really insulated from ground, correct?
Exactly. In fact, how Jerry Civic did it, I didn't want to mention how he insulated it. He used a plastic jar. See, he's got it sitting up there on the roof. The insulator sitting over the radio, the plate for the radio, he used a piece of metal, piece of aluminum he had, and to insulate the antenna standing over that, he just stuck a plastic jar, because that's all he had available at the time, and he used the four pieces of cord to hold the thing from falling over. So the plastic jar just sitting there is the bottom insulator and the place where the radios also join on, right underneath the jar, Paul, over.
Yeah, I'm going to add a comment here. Using copper pipe 20 feet long, Paul, the good news is the copper pipe is extremely good as a conductor. The not-so-good news is that copper pipe 20 feet long is reasonably heavy and a little bit whippy. It doesn't have anywhere near the stiffness of a 20-foot length of radio tower. you can get around the whippiness by using insulated guy wires, polypropylene or nylon rope, in the appropriate positions. And when it comes to the bottom of the copper pipe, yes, it's got to be insulated from your ground plane radials. And you could put a copper pipe adapter that adapts from one diameter to a larger diameter so that the bottom is flared out, and that allows you to plug in a convenient insulator like a very strong soda bottle or a plastic jar of some kind or whatever. There's a zillion ways you can make that bottom insulator. The exact shape of the bottom of the antenna is going to be so small compared to wavelength in both length and diameter that you're choosing a bottom adapter and insulator assembly only for mechanical reasons, not electronic reasons. So you've got a lot of choices there, but if you're comparing the weight of aluminum pipe versus copper pipe, the aluminum would be like one-third the weight and very similar to the same stiffness and whippiness. So those are a couple of things you got to consider. When you go to this website I'm looking at right now that Glenn recommended by DX Engineering, and I'm looking at the High Gain High Tower, HYG-AV-18HT. There, the vertical radiator really is a piece of tower section.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
It really is a piece of tower section to get around that whippiness problem. The way Jerry Civic solved it is the bottom half was a piece of steel pipe that's quite stiff, and the upper half was a real steel whip antenna, and just let it whip around. But in the case of your copper pipe, you do have some mechanical considerations to worry about what I call whippiness. WS2N, K2RIW, the TechNet.
Doesn't copper corrode, Dick?
Yeah, but the corrosion is very narrow when it comes to wavelength. I mean, you and I could build, Howie, a 80-meter dipole in which we used 14-gauge household wire, and we could leave the rubber insulation on the household wire, and it would make almost zero difference. With very careful laboratory measurements, you might see a slight difference with and without the rubber insulator. The RF energy goes down through the insulator and waits until it hits some real conductor. So the corrosion you get on the outside of the copper pipe will make it look homely, but that's just an insulating material. The RF will go down through that until it finds some raw copper to do its thing with, if you know what I mean. So that's not a showstopper. WS2N, K2LIW in the TechNet.
What about rectification? Won't you have rectification issues, Dick?
Negatory. Only if you've got a really lousy junction. If all of the places where the copper pipe is strung together are soldered together, I wouldn't worry about the corrosion. Yeah, if you've got a ground lug at the bottom of the copper pipe, and if it's only screwed in there and you've got dissimilar metals, then yes, you're going to get some corrosion and some yucky contact. You're going to get some corrosion and some yucky contacts. But an easy way to get around that would be a way you make that wiring to the bottom of the copper pipe, just solder on a ground lug and wire to the ground lug, if you know what I mean. So you're only going to get corrosion problems if you have a metal-to-metal compression junction. But Paul's not going to do that because if I know Paul, he's not even going to solder on that bottom ground lug. He's going to weld it on there, or he's going to braze it. And ain't nothing going to give him enough corrosion to make that stop from making good contact. WS2N, K2LAW in the TechNet.
Do I?
Okay, let me see if I have it. I do. Brazing, of course, is good. Still boss is even better. And it, welding, I've tried welding copper, with a TIG, tungsten inert gas welding, and it's amazing that you can do it, but you cannot believe the amount of amperage that you need to do copper. Copper welding, it's unbelievable. It's quite a shock. That's good. I guess you said, I have it here, so it's easy to do. I don't have to go out and get a piece of aluminum. It would be very, very simple to do. I mean, I was just going to take a big pipe jam in the ground and attach a couple of pieces of Kindorf to it, and a couple of U-bolts, and take a couple of Kindorf clamps, they call them Kindorf clamps, for that size. I got 1-inch copper. You can take 1-inch copper clamps and just insulate the copper from the clamps. Some people would use electrical tape. I would use, what's good is the pipe covering. You put pipe covering over it and you clamp that to the Kindorf. And, in two locations, a couple of, maybe 4 feet apart. And I don't think that 20-foot thing would go anywhere. So that's what I was thinking, Nick. But, aluminum is, of course, the way to go. But, my main question was, it had to be insulated. You could have just, jammed the thing in the ground. And I understand from Mel's answer that you can't. Back to you, Dick.
You could sleep a piece of PVC pipe of the right ID and OD over the copper pipe in the place where you're clamping it with U-bolts to the Kindle. That's one approach. You talked about pipe covering. What is pipe covering? What diameters? What thicknesses? How strong? Can you put U-bolts on top of it? What was its intended purpose? Is that where you're putting copper pipe outdoors and you don't want the weather to get to it? Over to you, Paul.
Well, you could use regular pipe covering that they sell at Home Depot to insulate your pipes. It slides right over the pipe. They make two different types. The type that you split and then you put it on the over the pipe, and then itself is adhesive, and then it surrounds the whole pipe. Or you don't even have to open it; you just slide it onto the pipe before you get involved with whatever project you're doing. So it's too insulated from heat or cold. And then these Kindorf clamps. Well, you got to know. I don't know if everybody knows what Kindorf is, but Kindorf is a common supporting pieces of metal that you can buy from any even Home Depot has it. It's three sided. It's not like a U, but if you were to look at it edgewise, it would be side on the left bottom and up. They have length of it, like 10-foot length, and you can cut it to size. It's got a bunch of holes in it, a bunch of oval holes. And you could attach this Kindorf to anything. You would attach it to, let's say, pipe coming out of the ground to support. Now you've got these two pieces of Kindorf horizontally, say maybe 4 feet apart, 4 feet above one another, horizontally. And then you'd take your pipe, any whatever you're using, say 1-inch or 3/4 pipe. It could be conduit, it could be copper. Let me drop it. Proper Kindorf clamps. Each clamp is two pieces that slide in, around into the Kindorf, and you put one little bolt through it, tied it up, and that clamp is done. And then you do the other one above that, 4 feet above that, and that would be good. I would think, Dick, but there's plenty of ways of doing it. But to me, that would be a simple, I guess, plumbing way to do it.
Who's that in the electrical industry?
The question I got for you, Paul, is that the pipe covering you're now discussing is an insulating material, which is foam, and that's a kind of a soft foam, and you can't put a U-bolt over that without digging through it, unless you put some kind of a long chunk of metal under the U-bolt to spread the force, if you know what I mean. I don't think that foam material is strong enough to survive a U-bolt into the Kindorf. Therefore, you might want to put a piece of PVC pipe over the copper pipe, and now you can really do some bearing on that. It's got enough strength to it. Back to you, Paul.
No. Not the U-bolts would be attached to, you need a support coming out of the ground. So the U-bolts would attach the Kindorf to that. That's no covering, nothing involved there. But the copper pipe now attaches to the Kindorf. and you could have any kind of covering on it. You see it with refrigeration pipes all the time. You know, you'll see pipes go traveling through buildings, and you'll see insulation around that, around each pipe, and then around that insulation, you'll see these Kindorp clamps. Kind of hard to describe if you don't know what I mean, but these clamps, it's just two clamps that slide into the Kindorp, and it's only one bolt that goes through it. And when you tighten the bolts up, these two clamps squeeze against each other. They're flat. There's no edges on them. And it just squeezes the covering, whatever you're using, to over your pipe. And it just gets tighter and tighter as you tighten this bolt, but it doesn't dig through the covering. If, you know, as long as you use a heavy enough gauge covering, then no problem. You won't have contact between the two.
Okay, you've got to draw us a mental picture of what a Kindorp clamp looks like. Is it a piece of metallic strap that is wide but low in thickness, and it loops around at a 180-degree angle and then has some kind of a bolt that goes into the Kindorp? What does a Kindorp strap look like? I presume it's going over top of the pipe insulation that's over top of the copper pipe. And is the copper pipe lying parallel to a length of Kindorp material? Is that what you're recommending? Back to you, Paul.
Okay. And do you know exactly what these Kindorp pieces of steel look like? And they come in stainless steel, very expensive, and they come in galvanized. Do you know what I'm describing?
The Kindorp material, yes, I've seen that. But right now, I don't remember ever seeing something called a Kindorp clamp. You're going to have to describe that to me.
Okay, you know, the Kindorp is shaped, you know, you've got one side, then you've got a bottom side, and then you've got a rising side, if you look at it edgewise. But at the top, at the top of each edge, it curves in on both sides, and it goes that whole length of 10 foot, you know, of the length of Kindorp. The clamps themselves, the Kindorp clamps, when you put them around it, they've got, each clamp has like two hooks on it, if you want to call it two hooks. The pointy parts of this clamp, when you put that around it, you know, you put that into the Kindorp, you can't lift it out. You know, in other words, you put it in on an angle, you can't pull it out. It grabs like a hook grabbing onto something. It'll grab onto the Kindorp. Then you put its matching side on the other side, and in between is the pipe, of course, now in this case the covering. And then when you squeeze these two clamps together, it tightens up. You know, you put one bolt and one nut through this Kindorp clamp, and as you tighten it up, that clamp tightens harder and harder against the pipe, or if you have covering in between, against the covering, and it doesn't want to move. I mean, that's the best way I could describe it, Dick. I wish we had an electrician on board, because they have plenty of conduit that has the same stuff. Well, conduit is attached to Kindorp that way, and maybe they would be able to describe it better than me.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Paul, when I look at the Kindorp end view, is it a U channel? And if so, is the left side of the U the vertical and the right side of the U vertical? Are they equal in length? And I think you told me the tops of each of the U's have a little additional metal that curves inward. And yes, there's lots of holes along the length of the sides of the U, and maybe even the bottom of the U of the Kindorp. And now this clamping mechanism is two separate pieces of metal that pick up some of those holes, and where the two pieces of metal come together, a bolt goes through it. And when you tighten that bolt, is it bringing the two halves of the U together? I think not, but it's clamping something that you've put down the middle of the U channel. Is that approximately what's going on? Over to you, Paul.
K2YO.
Okay. The Kindorf clamp consists of, if you want to say, really three pieces. There's one part that goes around the left-hand side of the pipe. Picture a pipe vertical. One goes around the left-hand side of the pipe, one goes on the right-hand side of the pipe, and the third piece is really nothing but a bolt and a nut. So each piece of clamp, there's two main parts of the Kindorf clamp, and they come in different sizes. You could have half inch, quarter, 3/8, you could have 3/4, 1 inch, 2 inch, 3 inch, they make 4 inch, Kindorf clamps, all different sizes. They make them for copper, and they make them for the electrician for their sizes. And what happens is,
K2YO.
Let's say the clamp on the left clicks into the Kindorf, and the clamp has like a rounded effect to it. It's gonna have the shape of the whatever pipe that you're using. And then when it gets away from the pipe, it comes straight out. It comes straight out to you. And then the other one, again, clicks into the Kindorf. It has a curving effect on the other side and comes straight out to you. And it's roughly like usually about an inch distance, or at least three quarters of an inch distance between the two. Let me drop it.
Stand by now. Bernie, go ahead and give us your description. K2IO, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Thanks.
Good evening, Dick. Are you able to go to a website?
Yeah, tell me what website to go to.
Okay, the usual www. Kindor, K-I-N-D-O-R-F, cinchclamp.com, K-I-N-D-O-R-F, C-I-N-C-H, clamp, C-L-A-M-P.com.
Kindor, cinch, clamp, all run together, no punctuation in between, .com?
Affirmative, all run together.
Okay, so far I got address cannot be found. Let's see. K-I-N-D-O-R-F C-I-N-C-H C-L-A-M-P .com. And I keep getting address cannot be found.
Okay. Try Googling those words. Kindorf Cinch Clamp.
Okay. I'm going to Google it because KindorfCinchClamp.com keeps coming up, address not found. www.KindorfCinchClamp.com, address cannot be found.
KC2MDP.
Go ahead, MDP.
Yeah, either type in Thomason Betts or type in Kindorf and then go to Thomason Betts. They'll have a little section there that says... I think electrical fasteners, it should say Kindorf, and once you get to there, it's page number 4.
Dick, you can come to my house. I'm tripping all over these things.
Okay, I see it. You described it as pieces of metal. They are pieces of wire. Wow. Kindorf original cinch clamps. These are pieces of wire with hooks on the end. You made it sound like flat sheets of metal, now, Paul.
They're about... they've got to be about 14 gauge... Oh, no, more than that. At least 14 gauge, maybe even heavier than that. Flat pieces of metal. Not wire, Dick.
Okay, I'm looking at something called cinch clamps. These are pieces of wire. You wrap it around the pipe. That's crosswise to the Kindorf. You stick your screwdriver between the two tops of the pieces of wire, and you twist them, and it becomes permanently connected. You've got a version that uses a bolt, and I'll find that in a minute.
Okay. All right. Very good. You go to a gas station, you always see the these pipes coming out of the ground. Maybe there's a propane setup, and you'll see, or you'll see vents, and you'll see a bunch of Kindorf. You see risers coming out of the ground, and they always have these clamps on them. They're the Kindorf clamps. Popular, very popular in gas stations. If you're driving your car, you pull in and say, "Oh, there they are." Mel, do you know what we're talking about? K2KYWS2N.
Although we use them quite a bit. That's what supported the conduits in many places. In fact, that's what I was going to say. If you want to use a good source, cheap source, you want to make a vertical, aluminum electrical conduit. You can buy it in any of the supply places. And they give you, in fact, a coupling if you want to put two 10-footers together. It comes in half-inch, three-quarter, one-inch, inch. I've used it. I've got one. One of my masks, a 30-foot mask. I've got three sections of it. I've just got it, you know, dyed in a number of sections, but it's inch-and-a-half conduit, aluminum conduit. No rust problems or anything, and cheap. There's an elegant way to go, Dick. Over.
So if I understand correctly, Paul, you want to mount your copper pipe at right angles to the major length of the Kindorf material, and somewhere around there you're going to put this insulating material. I think your foam is going to dig into those edges of the Kindorf, and I think it's going to cut through the foam is the one thing, but you'll work out those details. I'll back to you for any quick one on that one, Paul.
After what Mel just said, I'm doing it in aluminum. That's great. That's a better way to do it. Yeah, you just drill a hole in the bottom, attach your wire to that. That's even better. But you could mount it the same way, and then make Kindorf clamps for the aluminum pipe too. Of course, then I wouldn't need that. I'd still have to have an insulator. You'd still have to have insulation between the bracket and the aluminum. So no problem there.
I've actually loaded up to Kindorf. I've actually made antennas out of Kindorf stick.
Yeah, how good is the galvanizing on Kindorf? Does that survive outdoors for a reasonable length of time?
A lifetime. That stuff is very good. That stuff is used for mounting air conditioners. They use that for mounting station masters and all kinds of stuff.
Sounds like it's hot tip galvanized.
Okay.
I wonder if Bernie wants to say something, and then I'm going to go over to Joe, who signed in earlier. We didn't get to him yet. Go ahead, Bernie.
Dick, if you go to Google and Google Kindorf clamp, the fourth item down is from ThomasNet. It says pipe and conduit clamps come in 10 sizes. If you click on that, you'll see what I believe he's explaining. It's a similar type concept. Basically, it's just a clamp that'll clamp conduit at a right angle to Kindorf. But these are made out of heavy gauge, cheap type material, and have screws on them.
By the way, the website that I just selected that Google found for me was kindorfcinchclamp.com. Okay, I'm going to go to, I think you said I should first Google Kindorf. Is that what you said?
Google Kindorf clamp.
Okay, and the fourth item down, you said, okay, there's the drawers you're talking about with the bolt between. One, two, three, you said fourth. Pipe and conduit clamp, is that the one I should choose?
QSL, pipe and conduit clamps come in 10 sizes.
Yep, I see it. And those are pieces of sheet metal with a bolt through them. I still worry a little bit about, even though it's nice flat pieces of sheet metal against the pipe, Paul, I worry about those cutting through the foam. I think in those junctions where the Kindorf clamps are used, you might be forced into using something like PVC overcovering the foam. Bernie, do you think the foam would be strong enough to survive this clamping operation with and still maintain insulation with the pipe waving in the wind? What do you think, Bernie?
I think just tightening the screws down alone may be too much. That's a tremendous amount of leverage you've got there. These things are made to hold that type, that pipe pretty tight, so to get a dense enough foam, I think you would just penetrate the foam, and definitely with UV breakdown over time. If you put PVC in, I don't know if the PVC would flex enough to be able to get a tight enough grip then. So I'm not quite sure about this.
You could use tape. You could use tape or cold shrink tape and wrap the pipe in tape or an insulating material, Dick.
Yeah, go ahead, Mel. Somebody said comment. I thought it was Mel.
Electrical tape and do it that way.
KC2WGB. They make a thing called scotch pads, a little rubber pads. Two layers of that'll work. If not, just what you said, PVC pipe, cut a little length, maybe 2 inches, cut it down the middle with a hacksaw so that it'll will collapse as you squeeze the clamp. Works perfect.
KC2MDP.
Yeah, John's got a very good suggestion. You got it there, John. Steve, go ahead with your suggestion.
Yeah, just another variation on the PVC thing. I've done this before. Just take a piece of PVC that's slightly bigger than the pipe you're using, slip it over it, get it all set up. Once you're ready to do it, you take a torch, heat the PVC up, you know, you soften it up so you don't burn it, you clamp it, and that thing is not going anywhere. Back to you.
Yeah, excellent suggestion, Steve. I saw a beautiful water rockets that were made out of ordinary soda bottles, where the guy would make the seal between the PVC pipe that was pumping up the air into the soda bottles with the water inside. He would make the seal between the PVC and the neck of the soda bottle by simply softening the PVC pipe. He said with a candle. He may be meant with a torch, but you soften the PVC, push it in a compression axial dimension, the PVC puffed out and filled up the space between the pipe and the mouth of the bottle and made a perfect seal for him. So, yeah, PVC is a nice deformable material when it's heated. Let me pick up Joe. I hope, Joe, we haven't put him to sleep. W-A-2-R-Y-Y. Is it W-A-2? Mr. R-Y-Y, you know who you are. K-2-R-I-W, you got it, Joe.
Hey, Dick W-S-1, Armaflex insulation. You're never going to cut through this. Never. Never, believe me.
Sounds good. And that's probably an insulating material. Joe, you've got it? Okay, Joe, maybe is not with us right now. Matt, are you available? KC2, Yankee, Delta, Tango. If so, go right ahead, Matt.
Okay, yes. KC2, Yankee, David, Tango. My question has to do with Echolink and IRLP. I was wondering how that works and how I would go about setting that up with either the HT or if there's something with the mobile rig with Echolink that works as well. Back to you.
I think there's a website that gives a lot of information on that subject. Bernie, if you're available, would you be able to tell Matt the website he could go to that's going to tell him how Echolink works and how to set it up? K2 Yankee Oscar, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yes. First, go to IRLP.net. That'll give you some general information. I believe Echolink's, let me look up here. I think they're not Echolink.com, so they must be Echolink.org. Affirmative, it's Echolink.org. If I may take a moment just to explain how it works for us here at Limark, IRLP is what connects together our two main repeaters, the Glen Oaks and the Selden. We belong to a IRLP reflector, and basically IRLP just takes the audio out of our repeater, converts it into basically voice over IP, sends it off to another node where it comes back out and becomes RF again. So, for example, I'm speaking into the Glen Oaks repeater. That's going over the internet, coming out to Selden, feeding into the Selden transmitter, and going out. The number to remember is 9126, is the Limark reflector. So, for example, when Eric and I were at Hamvention in Dayton one night, we just dialed up a local repeater, pointed it at 9126, and effectively we were connected as if we were here on Long Island. Occasionally you'll hear gentlemen from Las Vegas popping up on our repeater, the gentleman Tom that runs EchoLink Mobile down out of Florida. These are all remote people coming into our machines. So if you are on a repeater that has EchoLink capability, you can dial into other repeaters. I'm sorry, I misspoke. If you're on a repeater with IRLP, you can dial into other repeaters. EchoLink is different. Let me drop it. EchoLink is different in that it runs on your computer. For example, I'm on an EchoLink node now. I have a headset connected to a computer. I'm connected to W2VL. I can hear and transmit everything and be part of the conversation. Does this make sense, Matt?
Yes, a little. Now, when you're on the computer with it, do you still run the computer through your HT, or is it directly through the internet and with like a microphone built into the computer or something like that?
Think of it as EchoLink is a headset into a computer. IRLP is RF only. So you cannot access IRLP through a computer. You can only go into an IRLP node with RF. Vice versa, you can access EchoLink with your computer and a headset.
A WB2HWW.
Go ahead, Howie, and I bet you've set up systems like this. I'm pretty sure that one of Matt's questions are going to be what software and what hardware is required to use either one of these capability. You got it, Howie.
IRLP runs on Linux or Fedora. It runs on a Linux-based system. EchoLink could run on a Microsoft-based system. I have IRLP and EchoLink. I'm actually on 9128. I'm too...
Let me ask you this question, Bernie. When Matt reads both of those two websites you just gave to him, and I just took a quick look at them right now, echolink.org and irlp.net, lots of information there. When he goes to all of the sub-paragraphs, do you believe it's going to give him enough information to know what hardware, what software, that combined with maybe some information that's on the Limark website? Will he be able to put it all together by reading those three pieces of information? K2 Yaiki Oscar, K2RIW, and the TechNet?
He will be able to put together the EchoLink solution by reading the website, downloading the software, registering, and it's very simple to get up and running. IRLP requires much more complexity. The website is going to explain to him how to create a node and everything, which you probably don't want to do. I have one, but I use it for testing the software that we use on our systems here at Limark. I don't ever use it for anything else. What you might want to do, Matt, is get onto the Limark 440 machine and link yourself to Howie's machine, for example. I believe he said he was 9128. All you need to do is, with your radio, key up the 440 machine, dial, DTMF dial, 9128, and you will hear Howie's connection message, and you will be connected to Howie's computer. When you're done, just dial 73. Obviously, hold down so you're transmitting, DTMF dial 73, and you'd be disconnected. So, in the Limark world, the 440 machine, you can dial outbound on IRLP. It's very simple. You just dial the four-digit node you want, 73 tears down the connection. The other two main repeaters, the two-meter repeaters at Limark, you cannot steer outbound, but do play around with the 440 machine. For EchoLink, I recommend you just download it, load it on your computer, and try it.
WB2HWW.
Yeah, hold on a minute, Howie. Let's first find out if Matt needs any fills on what he has heard so far.
As you can tell, I have not done this yet, Matt. KC2, Yankee, Delta Tango, K2LIW. You got it, man.
Okay, I got most of it. The only question I would have more, which hopefully it might be able to be more reinforced during field day, is how to, because I have the DTMF machine, microphone on my mobile rig and all that, and how I would go about dialing on that, because that would be more interesting to find out. I also looked on both of them, and I see there's a fee for that. Now, is that fee for lifetime, or is that like monthly or yearly? How does that work?
I could answer that question, Dick.
Okay, go ahead, Howie.
The IRLP, that's for the repeater owner or the person setting up the link, because you have to buy a board and you have to make a donation. There is an interface board that goes into your computer that brings out COS, and you also have to bring in audio input and output. If the station wants to, I think his name is Tim, if he wants to, I can give him my phone number over the air, and if he wants to give me a call tomorrow, I'd be glad to spend a half hour on the phone and tell him all about IRLP and Echolink.
Yeah, his name is Matt, and why don't you tell him your phone number, Howie?
Matt, my phone number is 718-591-3678. It's 718-591-3678. You can even go to my website. You can go to wb2hww.com. Yeah, we have Echolink, we have IRLP, we have all those gizmos on the network. And by the way, one thing I will make a comment, if you ever go on a repeater that has IRLP, always ask a control operator if it's okay to use the network. On my system, you cannot control the, you cannot outbound control the thing. You can't tell it where to go. Just like Limewalk, we do that for security reasons because we want to know what's happening. But you should always ask the trustee or somebody who's the control operator, may I use the IRLP? That's the appropriate way to do it.
Good information, Howie. Bernie, I wonder if you want to add anything to us. K2IO, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yes, Matt, definitely take Howie up on the offer. He's a good man. He's a very smart man. So give Howie a call tomorrow. He can take you through a lot of this. If you are, Matt, I know that you do search and rescue work and you're away sometimes. If you are away, just remember that 9126 is Limark, 9128 is Howie. If you can steer a network into either one of those IRLPs, you're back home at that point. Echolink, though, you can definitely dial out from your local PC. For example, I talked to my buddies back in California through Echolink. I'm on Echolink right now because I don't have RF to get out of my wife's office here. So definitely check it out. It's the exciting part of ham radio these days.
Okay, very good. Yeah, that kind of gives me a good overview of the whole thing. I know that was one of the main reasons why I got into ham radio in the first place, for the broad spectrum of being able to get on like anywhere in the country. I have talked with that guy from Las Vegas and also one guy from Florida as well on the line off the computer. So, thanks for the information, Harry. I'll definitely take you up on that offer tomorrow. And let me leave it there. And I'll definitely get more information on that. Back to Matt. This is KC2, Yankee David Tango.
By the way, one comment real quick.
Go ahead, Harry.
You could download, you can go to Echolink. You could get validated, and you could use your computer. You just have a microphone in this, and you can talk from your computer. A lot of guys will do this, and if you have an Apple iPhone, say have Echolink for the Apple iPhone now. That's another thing. You can come in on your iPhone on Echolink. Right now my Echolink is down. The only thing that's working on our network is IRLP. The Echolink computer is sitting here in a couple of pieces in my room. And that's about it. It's a wonderful thing,
And we're also, Bob, Dick, just so you know this, I think YO knows that we've been playing around with digital radio now, the new Motorola digital stuff, Moto Turbo. So a lot of the guys, it's not my repeater, but another guy has it. We've been fooling around with Moto Turbo. Whole new world, Dick, all digital. Digital radios and everything. It's a competitor to D-Star, Dick.
I heard on the input a very weak W2DC that did not come through the machine. Maybe you didn't have PL turned on. Want to give it another try? Okay, up to now I was listening to W2DC on the input, who tells us that text messaging is also available. Matt, let us know how this goes as you develop this capability. Mel, I think next weekend, if I'm not incorrect, is field day. The Kings County Radio Club, are you going to be located at Floyd Bennett Field? And if so, I thought the Brian or Ryan Visitor Center was being renovated. I'm a little worried that it might not be completed. So tell me about your field day operation next week, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, minutes so we have left over. Briefly say, yes, the Ryan Visitor Center is still being renovated. Of course, dealing with Uncle Sam and the contractors and all that, I don't know if it'll be finished in my lifetime, to say the least. So we've got an alternate place. As you come in the field, go straight. In other words, you come in right by the base of the bridge, that's the Marine Parkway Bridge or Gil Hodges Memorial Bridge. It says, you know, Floyd Bennett's entrance to the airport. Don't make any turns. Go straight down, right to the end, last building, building 272, 272. And you'll see the parking lot and everything there, building there, the last building. That's where we're going to be. Anybody would like to come to field day here locally? You're all welcome, Dick. Over.
Well, you too, TTT. TTT recognized. But before I go there, building 272, that strikes me when you go straight down there, very close to that hangar that you took me to 2 years ago with all of those aircraft being renovated. How close is building 272 to that particular hangar, Mel? Go ahead.
No, that hangar is north of 272, quite a bit distance, about a quarter of a mile, believe it or not. It's a good distance. 272 hugs the south side of the field, so when you come in, you see that runway. As you come in, you know, this runway that you normally go left down and down to the Ryan Business Center, but that also that road also goes straight eastward. That's the road you stay on. In other words, as you come in, don't make no turns. Go straight up, Dick, and without making any turns. And it's the last building on your right. Over.
And if I made the mistake of going further, I would eventually come to the hangar that you brought me to. So building 272 is a quicker find than that hangar, which I think is further down a similar road. Is that true?
To go to the hangar, you got to come in, go left onto the main runway, and then go halfway down, and then, you know, it's that other runway that cut across. Remember, you and I were walking across that runway, that cross runway. That was the east-west runway. And then when you come in, you would be going left. That was the north-south runway. It's actually bearing, what was the bearing? 130, I think. 13. I think that was runway 13. No, you're going to come in and go straight east. Straight east, berries, go straight up. You know, you go over there, you see the entrance, the where the guards are, you know, there's a speed bump. Keep going. Don't make no turns at all. Straight up, and the last building, if you go any further, you'll be in the water. Over.
Very fine. And give me a quick description of what's inside of building 272. Is it a smaller version of the Ryan Visitor Center? Go ahead.
Now it's a nondescript building. Yeah, it's a brick building. I don't know, nothing fancy. You'll see the front of the building with a staircase, you know, an entrance and all. It's they got an educational system in there. City One is a backup emergency communication system in there. We're on the second floor. Nobody will have any problem finding us. You'll see our mobile parked out front there.
And at night, it's all well lit up there, very well lit up, that parking lot. It's the parking lot's right in front of the building, so there's no complication in finding it. Like I say, when you come in, just keep going straight, and you can't miss it. It's right at the last building on the right. So, in fact, I don't think there's any buildings on the left.
You were visiting the Long Island
nothing over there.
Radio
that's
Club repeater system. Note number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Won't have any problem here. Finding it, Dick. Over.
Very fine, Mel. Gordon, W2TTT, go right ahead with your question. And also give me a quick thumbnail sketch as to how the TechNet at Bergen County Amateur Radio Club, I presume that's also in full swing these days. You got it, Gordon.
Before I take it, so I heard somebody ask, is there a talk into the Kings County field, they say?
Okay, Mel, what's your talk-in frequency?
Well, if somebody's monitoring it, like I say, we're a small group, but try to have my Andy talkie on at least. We use 44-17675. Wait a minute, let me check it. You know, I don't know why I have so much trouble remembering these different things. Let's see, no. No, no, okay. All right, wait a minute. 446. So, oh boy, hold on.
Might be 4460, simplex. 441?
He's getting us a number, stand by.
Hey, guys, put up a nice dipole.
446.675. Will be the most likely the frequency. That's my friend Stu's repeater. Should remember that. So 446.675, over.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Note number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Okay, so 446.675 is most likely the talk-in frequency. And give us a thumbnail sketch as to how the Bergen County Amateur Radio Club technical net is doing, Gordon. W2TTT, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, very good, and good evening, everyone. K2RIW in the group, W2TTT. Well, let's see, it's been running now over 2 years, so that's a good thing. It was 2 years back in April. So it's chugging along just about every week, every so often. You know, there's a little glitch. Net control doesn't pick it up if I don't take it. Or I'm away or something. But I think we've had more than 100 sessions. God only knows. Probably, you know, well more, more of that. In any case, the inspiration was this, Nat. And it's the Bergen Amateur Radio Association. In fact, they've been hosting the Hudson Division luncheon for the last couple of years. I think the last two. I don't know what the plan is for this year, but I do know that Jim Joyce, K2ZO, is involved in that very, very strongly. Usually ends up being the MC for that great event. Although I don't know if he did last year because of his heart issues, but anyway, it's a good time. It's been always had by all. It's done as a luncheon. I never get to it because I'm almost always away the weekend that they have it. But anyway, it's a good event and it's a good club, and I am a member. Let me drop it. Transmit's still going here. I don't know how to get it to receive. That was very weird. My receive wouldn't. Anyway, all is well. Let's see. Anyway, the other thing I wanted to mention, Dick, was that EchoLink, while it allows you to use your computer as well as going in via a radio link, such as a repeater, or whatever. But
the truth is that IRLP must have RF on both ends. Their whole raison d'etre, if you will, is RF based. They eschew the notion of using a computer